What I'm going to talk about next is beauty, which is an essential energy to understand, to know where dragon power comes from. Beauty was the first energy that entered the universe, created by the goddess. As I mentioned before, the first creation, simply a thought out of this one great creator, it's like a bubble. It's like the goddess blew a bubble of her love. Now, you can't even measure the size of this bubble in physics. It's 300 billion light years across. A very small bubble for the goddess. Because that, by measuring space-time curvature, scientists now seeing the universe as a spherical hologram. If you take this spherical hologram that's 300 billion light years across, as energy enters it, it reflects all of its multiple surfaces, and this interference pattern creates this complex universe. You know how a hologram works? Shine a beam of light on it, you produce a three-dimensional image. But a spherical hologram is more complex. If it's a bubble, shine a beam of light into the bubble, it reflects all over the place and creates this whole complex three-dimensional world inside it. This is very much how the universe is. It's nothing but an inference pattern of light, this illusion created by this reflecting light or the spherical hologram. So it's fitting this idea the goddess blowing this bubble. But the energy she blew into it was beauty. For simple reasons, first she wanted to fill it with joy. But joy in itself is too fiery, too volatile. It needs to be balanced with peace. Joy and peace together is what beauty really is. The things that you see as beautiful are simply reflecting this quality of joy with peace, exhilaration with serenity. This space of beauty is where the magic is of creation is anchored. And out of beauty you create the concepts of goodness and truth. So in this first bubble of creation, it's where the dragons exist. In order to really be in touch with that magic, you have to go back to discover your pattern of beauty. How you become, how you're a part of that world, and the beauty you have to bring into the world for your own particular expression. And it's important to understand how this is a part of our journey back to source, the ways we make up. Beauty is one of four things we call the hallows, the places we wake up. And it's particularly the one that's relevant to dragon magic. The four hallows are love, beauty, enchantment, and solitude. These are things that generally wake a person up out of the normal three-dimensional world, their survival mode, into waking up to something greater. Love, beauty, enchantment, and solitude. Now, quite often, you know which one is operating your life by its downside. You see, when you are here to find love, what you often experience is pain. See, what love and pain both do is create a connection, a closeness, a bonding. People often bond through pain when they can't get loving. It's found, for instance, that in the war, when the people going through torture chambers, when the war ended and people were released, although they're at first relieved, they had to go with a lot of counselling to release each other because the victim and the torturer became so well bonded to the pain. It also explains why you get abusive relationships and get abused children and so on. If people can't quite express the love, they'll bond through pain. And quite often many dysfunctional relationships consist of bonding through pain. So when you bond somebody because you're both in pain and you bond that way, you often find your relationship is pretty screwed up because that's how you're bonding all the time. Because pain is actually often easier to handle than love because you know it better. You have more of a sense of being in control. But love makes you more vulnerable. What you allow to love you is what changes you. The good side of that, though, is it's going to change you for the better, so it doesn't matter if you're out of control. But to be vulnerable to love is to change because you're loved. Now, beauty's downside is violence. Simply because what beauty does is to give you a sense of your eternity. When somebody's in violence, they're really trying to play God. That's the essence of their eternity. So if you should be waking up with beauty and you haven't done so, you probably find your life surrounded by violence. That's the next way of trying to see your eternity. Enchantment, on the other hand, is like the cracks and crevices in your life through which the soul can speak to you, when the routine is broken, the enchanted moments where the magic happens. That can also happen through crisis. Crisis is the same thing, it's broken routine, cracks and crevices in your life, through something else can speak when your routine is too stuck. So when you don't let the enchantment in, you have crisis. Solitude is that place of intimacy with oneself, where you can discover self and wake up. When you don't allow that, you end up with loneliness. Huge difference between solitude and loneliness. In loneliness can be very painful, a very dark place, where solitude is intimacy with oneself. What you're supposed to do though is simply wake up and use a place to find intimacy with yourself, to find the solitude. So quite often you know which is your hallows by the dark side of it that's been in your life.
What do you mean by your hallows?
A place where you wake up. It's one of these places is where you wake up to a spirituality. It's what first brought you out of your stuck physical three-dimensional routine into something greater.
Right, but it's not that you, everybody learns through all of them. There's a
one of them.
Particular one.
One will be where you've woken up,
okay.
And where you continue to wake up.
Only one. You don't.
It can be a bit more of another one, but usually there's one main one.
Okay.
It's your waking up point. You might learn a bit of that as well, but there's usually one place where you first woke up.
You mean at birth?
It's all sometime in your life. Quite often, for instance, you might be quite have a normal, simple, physical life for your childhood, and then at some point you get wounded. Which everybody happens at some point. All the expectations get shattered, the trust gets shattered, they go through the big wounding, which drives them into the shadow. Quite often what they experience is pain. And quite often, the ones who seek love are the ones who get that pain. And you find that your lessons in life have two sides to them. You're learning about pain and love. You want to wake up to the love, but quite often your learning is taking you through pain. Once you allow the love in, you don't need the pain anymore.
Now, is this the moment when you actually start recognizing yourself as who you are?
It's where it begins, yes. It takes you into your journey. When you're well on that journey, you don't need those dark sides of it anymore. You find when you're really on the path of love, the pain stops. When you're really in the beauty, the violence stops. When you relay the enchantment, there's no more crisis. When you make use of the solitude, there's no more loneliness. Now you can fight those things as much as you like, but they won't go away until you understand where you're supposed to be waking up. A lot of people spend their life fighting pain. The trouble is, they're so afraid of pain, they won't let the love in. Yet something keeps coming back to you. Yes, you do need love. You think you don't, then suddenly you fall in love again and turn to a mush and people walk all over and you get hurt. You say, promise it'll never happen again, and it does happen again. Until you actually embrace this fact that you're waking up to love. Pain has been part of the learning, simply because of a place of bonding where you get close, and when you do it through love, you don't need the pain. It changes. Once you understood what you're learning. So coming back to the dragon path, which is through the beauty. Quite often, the evidence that you should have been there is because of the violence that's been around you, in some form or another. And that can come in many ways. A lot of people often seeking vengeance for something. That's a way of vindicating the past in some way. Holding on to the vengeance of the past is a violent agenda. I said, you can't fix the past. You have to forgive it, move on. And the violence is still showing you you're looking for beauty. Because you're trying to get a sense of your eternity. See, one of the biggest things you fear as a bottom line, behind all your different fears and problems, is oblivion. You think your soul can die and that'll be the end to it. Look at how many ways this affects in your life. Quite often, you know, you're going through, say, some simple little hurt, and you think your soul's just going to wither away and die and there'll be nothing left of you.
Mm.
It can happen in intimacy. You might lose boundaries with another person. You're so much with another person, you forget what you want, and you're losing yourself. Your boundaries are going as if you're facing oblivion. You're going to fade away, nothing of you left. These are the basic fears going on when what is you won't exist anymore. So what you seek is your eternity. When you have a glimpse of that, there's no more fear of oblivion. And that is often the bottom line behind all your fears. So we're going to look at the whole journey of how we get to beauty. We can separate from so many layers, we need to know the way back. So I've listed a few of them in the sheets. We're going to go through this in the meditation. So, there's a foundation you build. So you need to pay for the journey. The first is about gathering.
Gathering.
Certain qualities you gather. Now, you don't have to go far to gather these things. You just go into meditation and you find them. That's the wonderful thing about meditation, you can go anywhere. Everything you want can be found there once you know what you're looking for. But there are places. First place we simply call the high ground. The higher ground is where you find those higher qualities in yourself. Your courage, confidence, hope, trust, humility, authority, permission, artistry of being, authenticity, conscience, character, integrity. These are attributes of yourself you have to gather to become whole as your first step. Then you gather with your hallows. You can gather your love, beauty, enchantment, or solitude. Whatever it is you need, you simply go into meditation, you're going to gather it. Then you're going to gather your passion. Can't get far without passion. Passion is like the fire of the soul. In order to gather your passion, you need to encounter what we call the passion stealers. Certain things, mechanisms, almost sub-personalities going on inside you, which take all your passion away. First is what we call the martyr. Now when you're in martyrhood, you're always being overburdened, misunderstood, and unappreciated. If you're doing those things, you're being a martyr, simple as that. You can't be a little bit of a martyr, you're either in it or you're out of it. Now the thing about martyrhood is complicated. There's two basic ways for you to use self-pity, either victimhood or martyrhood. The victim uses self-pity to hold you close. The martyr uses victimhood to push you away. But the trouble is, as part of martyrhood is being misunderstood. It's very hard to admit you're being a martyr. It's no, you misunderstood me. I'm not being a martyr. It's not really me doing it. The clever thing about the martyr is underneath they are very clever magician. You create all these problems in your life, make it look like somebody else is doing it. That's great sleight of hand. Now look at the complications which a martyr will do this. What are your tools of creation? Your desire, expectation, imagination. Well, desire we'll look at more closely in a minute, but what do you imagine when you're a martyr? When everybody's overburdening you, asking for too much, giving too much handle.
That you're limited.
And what do you expect? More burdens, nobody appreciating you. What you desire. You never admit you don't desire people to overburden you. What you desire is to punish and manipulate. That's why you're doing it. When you're feeling overburdened by somebody and pushing them away, you're making them feel guilty. Tearing down the self-worth, close down the function. Best way to destroy somebody is to destroy their self-worth first. When you're being a martyr and everybody's a burden to you, especially those closest to you, they feel terrible, you tear them down. It is silent revenge. It's silent hostility. Under all the burdens of being a martyr, you want to punish somebody. Now, there's a tricky bit, you see. When you ask the person who's being a martyr who they want to punish, they'll probably say, it's me. Yes, to a martyr, the burden, the impact is always upon you, not somebody else. Bullshit. Who else but yourself do you want to punish? Those closest to you? Quite often it's God. Whatever you perceive that to be. It's God. If I was up there, I'd do it differently. He's a lousy creator. He's fucked up. Unfair. Well, actually, bullshit going on. These are the kind of patterns that go on when you're being a martyr. It is silent hostility. And when you're being overburdened, misunderstood and appreciated, there is no passion. To reveal the passion, you have to reveal the magician that's hidden under that martyr. This kind of magician who can create all this complex reality, make it look like somebody else is doing it to you. Magicians where the passion lies. So under the martyr, you gather the magic. Then you have the outlaw. Bit of you that's the outlaw, separated. Again, it loses its passion because it feels so separated. The positive side is the rebel. You want to break free, not follow all the rules, find your freedom, find yourself outside of the restrictions imposed upon you. The rebel is where the passion is, the outlaw is where it's become trapped. So you may say that one's the passion stealer, the other's the passion giver. That's its remedy. then we have the judge. And you're making judgments, constantly closing down the passion. This is bad, this is wrong, everything gets closed down. Well, within that, the positive side is the critic. It's not the same as a judge. It's fine to criticise self and have constructive criticism of how things can be improved. That leads to passion because you've got direction in life again. There's nothing wrong with this, but I can improve it. There's direction, there's motivation, there's passion again. Behind the judge, you must find the critic.
Can you say again about the rebel?
When you were being rebellious, you're breaking free of all the restrictions. It's great. You need to find the inner rebel. Most times you do this when you're teenagers. See, interesting thing, the rebellion in you is very much attached to the sex drive. When you reach puberty, suddenly you don't want to follow your parents and you will anymore. You rebel, go and do your own thing. Find out who you are separate from them. It's linked to your passion. If you're overburdened and crushed and you don't rebel properly, you're never fully in your power. So when people think their kids are being a problem because they're rebellious, know exactly what they're supposed to be doing. When you get to teenage time, you rebel. If you don't rebel, you're still stuck. You don't find your power. And sometimes you still need to rebel. As many restrictions as you keep meeting in life, and to find yourself, you have to rebel. It's not saying as being the outlaw. You're closed off from everybody because you're different. You're seen as bad, as the judgments are coming, you see. So beyond the judge, you find the rebel. Beyond the outlaw, you find the rebel. Beyond the judge, you find the critic. Another big passion stealer is what we call enrage. Rage that's turned inwards. When you're in rage, it's consuming your vital force from inside. See, rage is really there to protect you from disempowerment. When you have rage, it's because you've had a massive loss of worth or power. Become like a wild animal packed into a corner that wants to rip somebody's throat out because it's disempowering you. It doesn't get expressed because there's no place for it in society. It turns inwards and consumes all your energy. People often go into depression as a result of suppressed rage. Now you can go punching cushions in the corner until you're blue in the face. It does not go away. It'll burn you out before you burn it out. Because the only way to deal with it is to take your power back. It's there to protect you from disempowerment, from taking it from the loss of worth. One who's actually lumping shame on you, taking your worth away, wants to tear the throat out. So the answer in rage is outrage. Simple. When you're outraged, you change it. You don't listen to it anymore. So be outraged, it's okay. There's passion in that.
I don't get the hitting the cushion thing because
that's what some people do when they're
embodying.
That's what some people do to try and release the rage. They're angry, they give it a good punch.
No, I think it's a good thing because it embodies it. You kind of feel
yes,
it.
Yes, but when it's real rage, it won't never wear it out. Sometimes you're angry, you can have a good session and let it all out. When it's rage, because you've been disempowered, it will never go away until they take your power back. Simply because it's trying to defend you from power loss. It's like this animal backed into a corner needing to survive. The rage will not go away.
But
you can punch cushions until you're exhausted and the rage will still be there. It'll burn you out before you burn it out.
Maybe you can sit in meditation taking your power back all the time, but your body doesn't feel it or your muscles haven't felt that contact with it.
Nothing to do with it. Expressing it in that way will not get rid of the rage. The animal you have to embrace to take power back.
What has to be embraced, did you say?
The animal.
The animal.
You have these examples, for instance, known in children. If they're in touch with the animal, it's released, it protects them. There have been times when they're about to be abused, suddenly this wild animal comes out and scratches and bites and the person's driven off by a little child. That's the animal functioning. It protects them from massive disempowerment because they're about to be abused. People often don't let that happen in this society, yet the animal is a natural part of you. When it's in rage, it's there to defend you from disempowerment. If your power's been taken away and you're left like empty because somebody's taken all your worth away and left you broken, you're in rage. It wants to tear somebody's throat up, but you won't let it. It'll devour your energy all the time because that's all it's got to feed upon when it's been denied. It manifests as low energy and cynicism. Quite often you don't even know it's there anymore. When you're in low energy and cynicism and depression, quite often you have to find where you've been disempowered and use the rage to take it back. Best way there is to go back in meditation, not punching cushions. You become the animal, you rip apart that one who's taking your power and take your power back. Now, the animal doesn't do it gently. It wants to taste blood. They do this in meditation, so be afraid of it. In the meditation, it's okay to taste somebody's throat out and taste their blood and watch the guts spill all over the place. That's what the animal wants to do. And in that process, it's taking power back. It's not just to kill them, but you realise there's all this power they're taking from you. You take it all back, leave them a scattered mess of guts all over the place. Mm-hmm. That's how the animal feels.
It's good to express your rage maybe after you've connected with the animal.
Yes, you need the animal to do it. Yeah. What's happening here is the animal has been shut away and forgotten. It's like it's shoved away dark in the woods somewhere where nobody wants to see it because it's not acceptable in society. You back it, go back and then find it, you wake it up, lead it out in the woods, make friends with it, let it be ally again, let it tear apart where we want it to tear apart. Take the power back.
So, taking the power back, that's outrage?
Yeah.
Yeah.
When your enrage turns outrage, then your passions come back.
Yeah. So, in a life situation, suppose someone has made you angry, and
angry is not quite as rage. See, somebody might piss you off one moment, so you get out of the system and it's dealt with. If somebody's taking your power away, it might be through a long time through your childhood, your parents just criticise you all the time until you feel worthless. You don't know how to express it. You go through life feeling totally, really angry inside, no expression. You end up being very depressed, apathetic, no drive, no passion. It turns to low energy and cynicism. That's the hidden rage. When you find it, the animals come out and realise, this person has been disempowering me all these years. I want to tear that throat out, spill their guts, taste their blood. Then I'll feel better. And I'll take my power back, and then I can go out and be myself again, do what I want, because I've got rid of this obstacle who's stopping me.
Are you saying you go back in your animal power in the raging meditation, or do you have to be a specific animal? Because there are specific...
You'll find your own animal.
You find your own
animal. And it's like, well, the case of when you're in your rage, what animal does it feel like?
Right.
Okay. Do you feel like a tiger? Do you feel like something more cold, like a scorpion that's almost a sting to death and coldly? It's different levels of rage according to how you feel, according to your own animal nature.
This be passed down through families?
Yes. You see, anything that's denied ends up being creating an imprint on the genes, a little crystal. Then it's part of the crystal of your structure that's passed on. So you may actually find a rage that's not even yours when you go deeper into it. You might even be your grandmother being abused, and you're still holding that rage. When you get the animal out, you go and destroy all the abusers and take your power back. And there's passion in that. You wake up again.
And is suicide part of repressed rage?
Yes. See, with suicide, there's extreme apathy. You give up on life. Can't go anywhere. You feel powerless. Your power and your worth have been taken, basically. And you think you want to kill yourself, but actually you really want to kill somebody else, but you deny it. So, you know, don't be afraid to go to these horrible places. We all have them. We're nasty things inside when you really look. That's not who we are, but we have it. And underneath the nasty bits, we find something really beautiful as well. So when you go through that rage, you get back to your passion. You'll be whole, remember? Just like with dragons that have the angelic and the demonic. You can find your demonic side and go through it to find the wonderful beauty that's behind it. But you have to be whole. You've got to go through your shadow. So the next passion stealer is what we call the mad woman. It's an archetype. I don't know why they'd make it into a woman, but that's how one of the Jungian archetypes. It's that which destroys love. It's madness. Get into a relationship and just totally wreck the love. Madness. Now that works in strange ways. You see, people often like to test love for some reason. Make sure it's good enough for them. You know, is this love enough? Let's push them how far we can see until the love runs out. You don't know how far it's gone until it's broken. When you test love, you destroy it. It's gone. That's the only way you found out how far it could go. So people who go through relationships testing the love will always destroy it. It's madness. The positive side behind that is the creative madness of risk and daring. See, quite often when you want to test things out, it really means you need to take risks. If you enter a new relationship, it's vulnerable. There's love here. You're scared. You're going to get hurt. Take the risk. But of course, you have calculated risk. Is this person an arsehole? What do I know about them? Quite often, we don't understand what expectation is. We call it wishful thinking, we call it expectation. To expect is to look beyond. Spect, the word in perspective, introspection, it's all about looking. X, like an exit, is what's beyond it. Expect, therefore, is to look beyond. I look at the situation from there, trying to look beyond where it's going. That's expectation. So to have real expectation, you've got to be a bit rational. You might enter a relationship now and say, I expect this one to be the one that's going to work. Actually, if I look at my patterns and realise I've got this intimacy problem, and every 3 months I suddenly give up on them and want to go away and close off again. This person's a nutter, and after 3 months they start killing their partner. What I really expect is that in 3 months we're going to hate each other. But rather than admit that, to say, no, I would like this one to work again, so I expect this to be the real relationship, it's going to work, this is the right one.
That's wishful thinking rather than expectation.
Exactly. Expectation means you look and look beyond. Try and see where it's going. Use a bit of common sense there. So within that expectation, you can have some risk. You don't know exactly what's going to happen, but you can have like a calculated risk, so it's where that's really a worthwhile risk. Don't risk everything when you're going to get yourself killed. It's like within business, if you put your money into something, don't put all your money into something, so if it fails, you're finished. You've always got some backup, so if that one doesn't work, you can do try something else. There's calculated risk. You've got to try and perceive the level of risk by what you look at and look beyond and expect things. So, beyond this madness, which always tests love, instead find the risk, the daring. That daring is not stupid, though. You can perceive the level of risk by looking and expecting.
How is this different from the testing? Because like, if I take a particular risk, I still see how my partner does with it.
You so do, in some ways, it is. But testing is a bit more than that, you see. You want to keep prodding them to see if they're still going to love you. It's hurting them to see if they're still going to love you.
Oh.
See how far you can stretch it. That's testing.
Oh, no, that's not what I do.
No, that's not testing.
Okay.
That's not madness.
Okay, then.
That's at least one possible archetype that can be there, stealing your passion. Not necessarily what you've got. You might have one or two of these, not necessarily all of them.
Okay.
So
not everybody's mad.
The mad woman is like, you're always in the mood of... Testing
love,
that's what you want to do.
Well, basically you're insecure about love, and you test it until you destroy it. You do it again and again and again, always testing it. Because each time you destroy love, you're still more insecure and need to test it again. And every time you test it until it's destroyed. That's madness. It's not the same as risk. Maybe I will get hurt, but I'm going to give it a try anyway, while I keep testing them to see if they love me first, before I'll dare to love them back.
Now, if you... tend to attract partners who seem to have a similar one of those, which is not really one that I think I have. What does that mean? Does that mean anything?
It can mean several things if you look at how things interact. Like if you've got somebody... Well, actually, quite often it can be shadow stuff. See, the fear of intimacy has two sides. Love them and leave them, or love them and wait them to leave me.
Mm-hmm.
So if it's somebody who's like that who's going to end up leaving you, you don't have to be the one who's doing the dirty and leaving them. They're going to leave you sooner or later. Saves you facing your intimacy problem. It's more hidden, but the same thing of intimacy. So you often have to look at shadow here, that what you design yourself comes in from the outside. If you've got an issue with intimacy, you either love people and leave them when it gets too much, or you love them, or you're going to fall in love with somebody who's going to leave you. And you get all hurt and everything because it hasn't worked, but at least you haven't had to deal with your intimacy issue where you get too close and face oblivion. A couple of reasons why you fear intimacy, apart from this face of oblivion when you lose your boundaries, the other one is shame. The closer you get to somebody, the closer they see who you are inside. If you don't like what you see inside yourself, you don't want anybody else to see it. You get closer and closer and closer, and you can't point the switch off, can't get any closer. Now, relationships don't stay still. If you're not getting closer, it suddenly falls apart. So you need a relationship, get closer, 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 stop, break apart. That's the pattern. It may be because you love them and leave them. It may be because you fall in love. But because you don't really want to stop loving them, you're going to pick somebody who leaves you before you go too far.
But I guess what I mean is, you know, I tend to attract partner who test me.
Ah, testing. Yeah.
You know, that's what I meant. It's like who test me and it's like... And I feel like I don't mind to a certain extent, you know, to kind of prove
this
that
is,
I'm
this,
in there.
That
but
is
at
the
a certain point,
bit, yes.
That's enough.
That's another side. That's the proving bit, you see. When somebody's testing you, sometimes you have an issue that you need to prove your love.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I guess that's... Don't you?
That's an interesting one. Let's look at how love works in its fears. Whenever there's fear, whenever there's love, there is fear. It's because what you fear most is losing the love. And this applies to everything. Because if you don't love something, you won't fear losing it. You won't fear death if you don't love life. The biggest fear of losing the love, and there's three ways of doing that. You leave the love, lose the love itself, lose the object of your love, or not live up to the love. Now, what's behind this not living up to the love? You've got to turn around and look at what you demand of love. You often think, what does love demand of me? But actually, what you really need to look at is, what do I demand of love? What do I expect of love? People often think, once I'm loved, then my life is going to be okay. Then I'll be happy, then all this and this will happen. No, there's usually other issues we're going to work on, which is quite separate from love. Love doesn't promise anything apart from love. I mean, love is great. It doesn't do anything but love you, though. It's not going to make you 3 inches taller. It's not going to suddenly make you rich. It's not going to affect your health and make you happier and all those things. There's other issues to deal with, but it's wonderful stuff to have. Mm. Now, if you demand things of love, you often twist it around to think love demands something of me. But if somebody loves me, oh dear, what do I do to live up to this love? If you've got that issue and somebody's testing you, you fall straight into the pattern of proving your love, because you're trying to live up to that love.
You talked about two reasons that people fear intimacy. One of them being shame, of people seeing who you really are. What was the other one?
Boundary. If you lose yourself by being another person, forget who you are. You forget who you are. You're facing oblivion. You're losing yourself. It's scarier than death, because even with death, something lives on you. Your beliefs and afterlife and incarnation, all kinds of things. When losing yourself is oblivion. It's much scarier than death. It's the end.
Can I have a question with the the concept of thinking that you're asking from things from love? So rather than, oh, I want to be 3 inches taller or 10 pound lighter, or can it be that within the partnership, what you're asking from love is what you're asked, that you're expecting too much from your what your partner would provide for you in love?
Can be, but let's look at what you expect from love itself. That's the real key. Because that's what comes to the sphere of not living up to love. When you're loved, it's great, welcome, it's good to be loved. Why do you have to live up to it? When somebody loves you, and you're feeling unworthy, what do you have to do to be loved? It's all negative conditioning. See, when you're born as a child, your parents should love you. Of course, they'll start teaching you then that you have to start deserving things. You've got to be good, otherwise they might not love you. You start getting these false ideas in your head that you're not worthy enough just for who you are. You've got to earn it. You start having then demands on love. And you ask your parents if they loved you. Rather than say, yes, I love you, they say, oh, do you ask that? I work my fingers to the bone. No, that's not love, that's motherhood. Did you love me? Quite often they can't answer that. Because they don't know. The love got blocked and got carried away and all kinds of other crap going on. So love, you know, it's complicated when you look at it, but at its root it's simple. It doesn't promise anything apart from love. We all want to be loved and love, and it's wonderful. But it doesn't do anything else apart from love. It doesn't solve all your problems.
You talked before about just being willing to receive it, didn't you?
Yeah.
It seems.
Because when you're willing to receive it, great, but if you have to live up to it, suddenly you're not willing to receive. You think, oh no, I'm not worthy of this.
I think a lot of us carry the pattern of not being worthy in some way. But what would you say would be...
That's all shame.
Yeah.
All this conditioning comes and you're told you're not good enough.
So what would you say would be kind of the best steps in terms of working on being more worthy of love?
Go to your heart, dragon. Look in the right mirror. Let go of all this conditioning that tells you you're so lowly and unworthy. And begin to see your majesty and magnificence. Apart from that, you may have particular times in your life when people have dumped shame on you. Squeeze it out and give it back.
Give it back, yeah.
See, quite often when there's abusive behaviour, it's a vehicle for people passing on shame to you. See, people don't want to carry shame. It's very horrible to feel. If you can get somebody else to feel it for you, you no longer feel it.
And that's what actually perpetuates a lot of the abuse that goes on within society, particularly like child abuse and stuff. Just dumping
somebody
shame.
Somebody feels terrible, so they make you feel it instead, and then because you feel the shameful one, they feel they're free of it.
Yeah.
And you're carrying somebody else's shame, which you can't forgive because it's not yours. Do you want to find what you've done wrong? You haven't done anything wrong. Just give them their shame back because it's not yours. Sometimes shame is real because you made a mistake and you haven't forgiven it yet. You see, when you make a mistake, you feel remorse. With shame, you are the mistake. That's the difference. You feel flawed, you feel defective, not good enough. No, realise you can make mistakes. You learn from the mistakes, you change, you do it differently because you build conscience. So you recognise, acknowledge, forgive, change, it's done. But when somebody else is burdening you with their shame, it's hard to deal with your own. It gets too complicated. So give other people their shame back and forgive your own mistakes. Sounds simple, but there's lots to do. But it is simple when you do it. You might do it lots of times in different situations, but it's that simple. When you make a mistake, recognise this doesn't feel good, it's not what I like to do, forgive it and change, don't do that again. When somebody else has dumped shame on you, squeeze it out of your body and hand it back to them in your meditation. It's not yours, it's theirs. Don't feel bad just because somebody else is feeling bad and is dumping it on you. So, coming back to this whole love thing. So there's three types of fear around love. Losing the love itself, losing the object of your love, not living up to the love. Problem is, when you're in fear, is when you stop destroying the love. You might become judgmental. A person's loving you, and you suddenly feel, oh, I've got to earn this love. And you want to do something for them. Because you're in fear of losing the love, you start being controlling. Which destroys the love, doesn't it? The trick is to love beyond fear rather than without it. Because the reason I'm afraid is because I love. I'm afraid of losing this love. Therefore, instead of focusing on the fear and being controlling, go back to the love and be loving. Simple. In case of recognising the game and just shifting focus. Love beyond fear rather than without it. There's an old saying, love is letting go of fear. Bullshit. There is no fear without love. Whenever you feel love, you feel losing it. You have to learn to love beyond fear, not without it. When you love something, you're going to fear losing something. Simply shift your focus back to the fact that you love, rather than acting on the fears which make you controlling. That gets you out of the madness anyway. When you can take risks and be daring, instead you've got the passion.
Now the love that's destroyed through the testing, can that be gained back, or is it like scar tissue on the heart?
It won't be gained back in that relationship. That's finished by it. You love somebody, test them until they go away because they're broken. That love won't work again. They're gone. You can try elsewhere. What's often happening, though, you're stuck in a pattern where you want to love. You test them first, make sure they love you before you dare love them back. You don't know how far to go. Let's push a bit further to see how much they love you. You don't know how far it's gone until it's broken. What's actually happening there? Is you're trying to get people to pay your debts. In a way, you see what's happening. As in my relationship, this last person hurts me, therefore you prove yourself. You pay their debt that they owe me. You might as well say, okay, my last person ripped me off of 5,000 quid. Before I have a relationship with you, give me 5,000 quid to make up for it. That's what you might as well say when you're testing love. So look at it that way and recognise it. Somebody else has hurt you is not this person's burden. Release your past. Okay, the next passion stealer is what we call the loan shark. He's a bit sure he wants to pay debts. He owes something. You're burdened by what you owe all the time. And that's never over. You try and give something back here, something back there, and you know how loan sharks work. There's always more interest. You can be free of it. That's what shame is like when you keep trying to make up for your past. You have to forgive it. Which is why the answer to the loan shark is the forgiver. But you can say, this is past. I've learnt, won't do that again. I'll forgive and move on. Trying to make up for your past is endless because there's always interest. So the last bit, the passion stealer, is what we call the dark lover. Yeah, you know, in loving, in dark areas. Some of it's fun, some of it gets too dark. The answer is the light shadow. See, the shadow carries everything you disown about yourself. That's good and bad. If you deny your anger, you find yourself surrounded by angry people. If you deny your creativity, you'd be surrounded by creative people. The light shadow, then, is all the positive stuff you denied about yourself. Quite often, that's what you've got to find behind the dark lover. All the twisted bits are there because you're not owning all your good bits. Now, the way this exposes itself in your life is through envy. It wouldn't be envy if they weren't reflecting your light shadow. Many people have good qualities, you're not envious of all of them, but somebody's got something which you're envious of. It's because that is in you and you haven't brought it out. You start projecting. The envy is a reflection of who your light shadow is. So everybody that you're envious of, look at those qualities. This is what's inside you trying to wake up. It's yours, it's in you. Own it. When you look for that, bring out that light, you become all that twisted bits of yourself. Which gets into the envy, because envy gets really nasty, it destroys the love. See what happened? You might fall in some love with somebody because they've got this wonderful quality, then the envy comes in. Within a relationship, that can be a horrible thing. It twists it. You're going to realise, no, what I'm seeing in this person I already have. I'm reflecting it here, that's why I love it so much. I'm envious because I haven't recognised it myself. I need to wake up.
So how would you describe the dark lover, the opposite of that?
That's a twisted bit, which says, okay, it goes into so heavily into the, it loves somebody, it gets so heavily into the envy, it starts twisting everything.
Envy of what's in them, or envy in life in general?
No, envy is a quality in a person. You see, jealousy is usually the things. You might have more money and I get jealous of it, that's a thing. If you say more creative than me and better musician or something, that's envy. Oh. It's a quality within you. It's deeper than jealousy, because jealousy is just a thing. It's not real, it's not who you are.
Mm.
Envy gets deeper than jealousy, it's nastier. It can go deeper in its pain, in its distortion. It turns to rage in the end, and gets destructive.
Could you explain that dark lover again, please?
That's where the envy comes in. You love somebody because you love what's in them, but then the envy comes in because you want to find that in yourself. Then the person you say you love, you then start destroying. Bit different from the mad woman who simply tests love. The dark lover gets really nasty in its envy. It's twisted and manipulated and subtle and hidden. Some of you might have had relationships like that, you know what I'm talking about. What's it like when you're with somebody who's envious of you? Doesn't turn out well, does it?
No.
The longer you're with them, the nastier it gets. More twisted.
It just gets really manipulative and twisted.
But the thing is, it's destroying them as well, it's consuming the passion. You want your passion to get this to this beauty. So you're going to face all these passion stealers and find what's behind and get back to the good bits. It's easy in meditation once you know what you're doing. So everything can be done inside in this inner world rather than out there. Simply because the inner world is more real. This is the illusion. If people tell you to do things in the real world, yeah, that's meditation, that's real. This isn't. It works better in there because it's real. That's where the energies are, can be looked at and handled and changed, and that's where you're manifesting. Everything you do in the inner world is then manifesting outwardly. That's real. That's another important thing to realise. People get things back to front. Magic is not going into an illusory world to create reality. It's going into reality to redream your illusion. So, that's the third part to gathering your passion. Bit complicated, that one. Let's do the others a little bit quicker, not as complicated. The fourth thing you gather... It's vital radiance from your resonance, abundance, momentum, or balance.
Say again.
You're getting the radiance or the light of your resonance, your abundance, your momentum, or your balance.
It's on the sheet, yeah?
Yeah. And I'll describe a little bit more so you know what you're talking about.
Yeah.
Your resonance, yeah? Overall energy of what you're about. There's something of energy you have. What's your resonance in the world? It's hard to define, but it's you. Gather it. Your abundance. It's not just your money. You have abundance in many levels, in your joy, your positivity, your creativity, your love, your participation in life, your integrity. This is all your abundance. Look at everything it means and gather it. Your momentum. Hopefully it's not with momentum. What this means is that every time you create something, the expectation increases. Therefore, next time you do it, you expect even more, and therefore create even better. That's an upward momentum. A doubt of momentum is, I was in doubt in the first place, therefore the vision didn't work. So I fell, now I doubt even more. It gets worse and worse and worse. You get your down spiral or your upward spiral. You want to get into your upward spiral. Every time you succeed, your trust, your expectation grows. Because your expectation is greater, you create even better next time. So what happens suddenly? You're not suddenly, right now, expect to be a millionaire tomorrow unless you're already reasonably rich. If you're in a life of high failure, you're not going to expect to be a millionaire tomorrow. Let's build the expectation gradually. Create something now, It gets better, and it gets more positive. Okay, if I can create this, and momentum's growing, I'll create even better now. And each time my expectation grows, my creation grows too. Maybe after a year or so I'll be a millionaire. 2 years, 10 years, whatever. But you have an upward momentum. Not that money is the end result, that's only thing, that's only means to an end. You know, you won't get there just by focusing on money. You need to know what you want money for. What do you really want to be happy in your life? Fifth thing you gather is from the core of your power. As I mentioned, the real core of power is love and will. Which one do you need more of to find the balance? Now you can tell this quite easily. You see, when you have love without will, you get walked all over and end up falling into apathy. When you have will without love, you go into manipulation and control. You see, love and will often get separated in a person. Because when you're a child, you learn that when your parents are loving, they say yes. When they're willful, they say no. So the love and the will become separated. So what happens then, you might be willful until you fall in love, then you turn into a mush and they can walk all over you. Because the love and the will are not working together. What should happen is that the love gives step to the will, and the will gives direction and definition to the love. If I've got love without will, I'll be saying, oh yes, I love you all, but not actually doing anything, not helping anybody. With the will, it says, right now, I'm loving you in this particular way, I'm doing this for you. This is what I've got to give. Like it or lump it. This is how I love you. That's my will. But also, will without love, so it becomes an attempt to control. There's no depth to it. When you have a will, but there's love, then there's depth. So you see how the love and the will ought to be working together, but they got separated. We're bringing them back. And quite often you begin by gathering what's missing. If you have strong will but not much love, gather that. If you have lots of love but not strong will, gather that. So you can gather love or will, whatever is needed to make the core of your power. Then you gather power itself as a sixth thing. Once you gather from the core, gather some power. Really, it sounds easy, doesn't it? You go in meditation and gather it. Why not? You do anything you like in meditation, it does come in. You've got this wonderful energy inside called this place called meditation where everything is possible. You step out of this limited world of being a victim of facts into where all possibility lies. Simple. That's what you do in meditation. Go back into centerless possibility, you can gather everything. So gather some power. Seventh thing you gather then is from the higher magic. Which is again, one part is love, the other part is choice. Which do you need again? Love fuels the magic. But have you been good at making choices? Maybe you've got this love, but haven't made any choices yet. Choice is not always easy to make.
Is it love and choice?
Love and choice are the two components of higher magic. See, when you enter the real love and make a choice, it happens. That's higher magic. Techniques only get you there. But higher magic is beyond choice, beyond technique. The rituals and things project you into a space where you can do this, to activate the will. When you enter that great source of love and make a choice, it happens. That's higher magic. And a big part of it is then the ability to make choices. Are there choices you haven't yet made? You actually need to stop and look and make a choice. So you gather either love or choice to be whole.
Doesn't matter which you gather.
Whatever you need. If you have lots of love, make choices, gather some choice. If you make choices but not based on love, start gathering some love. Anyway, that's the first step for gathering. This is the foundation.
5 years later, we get back to step two.
No, that's painful. In meditation, you do it in 5 minutes. You know what you're gathering, just gather it. gather that, got it all. Simple. That's a good thing about meditation. There's all this possibility there. You can gather as much as you like.
But isn't it also about integrating that through action? I mean, it's all fair enough to kind of like gather it in the meditation, but I think it only really gets birthed into being
later.
When you actually live it in a new way.
Yeah, hopefully that's part of the process.
That takes a little bit longer than 5 minutes, no?
Well, the meditation might take 5 minutes.
Okay.
Later, stuff stops happening and you work with it. See, magic can work in many ways. You may find you've done a meditation something to happen, and there's a little sign of the next day in your life that something's happening. It's not quite there yet. But you have to start looking at opportunities and things, you know? You might say, I want this spell for a new job. Next day you meet somebody, there's a possibility going on. A week later, there's an interview happening. A week later, you've got the job. You might be staged, you start looking at it, but you have to take those steps as it comes in. They're posts, they're stages of manifestation. But the magic itself, you might do in 5 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
Or 33 seconds, as I did today. If you're simply doing simple visualization. So yeah, the actual magic bit in meditation, this is easy. It's because when you're in there, you've got the responsibility. It's hard to go through life not being stuck in facts again. So in back in meditation, let go of those limitations and just gather all this limitless power. Gather what you need. Okay, after building the foundation, next bit is what we call the sweep.
So that's the gathering done with?
That's the gathering. There's all the plenty to gather there.
Yeah.
You'd be pretty full by then.
Well, that's what I thought, yeah.
Gathered all the stuff you need. That's a good start. Part of the sweep is because it's like a curve. Simply because when you look at these five things, intimacy, freedom, trust, mattering, and vulnerability, it's like the first relates to the fifth, second relates to the fourth, and you've got middle bits, so it's like a curve. So intimacy is linked to vulnerability. Freedom is linked to mattering.
Mm-hmm.
Mattering, I mean letting something matter. Thinking what does matter and really letting it matter. What matters? Intimacy you need. To be close. There's no success without intimacy. If you don't experience the amount of intimacy that you want, you're not letting the magic in. And to be intimate, you're also being vulnerable. See, magic is also vulnerable. Because what you're going to allow in is going to change you. So we're stepping out of this mechanical view of doing things by force. It's not built to build each other along. Real creation is resonant, therefore more feminine and more vulnerable. Two waves coming together, blend together and produce a third wave that changes them both. That's how creation really works. You're being changed to what you're creating. To have a different future, you're going to be a different person. So I'm saying with this creation of future in this double quantum wave, you create a future creates you, you're different, you receive it, you change. Therefore, in order to work magic, you have to be vulnerable. The more vulnerable you are, the more powerful you are. Because the more you can change. The more you change yourself, the more you change your reality. If you have a relationship to reality around you, to have a different reality, you're going to be a different person.
And that's all related to these five...
Well, that's the vulnerability bit.
That's the vulnerability.
Which involves intimacy, because in that vulnerability, like I said, to be close, to be changed, there's a moment of intimacy in that. There's freedom. Two types of freedom. Freedom to and freedom from. You're going to be free to do things. You want to be free from various restrictions. Freedom is something you're going to acknowledge that's within yourself and following that path. That's why it's a sweep. You've done lots of gathering, then you follow this little path. You begin to see your freedom, your trust, your mattering, vulnerability. Little journey which is knowledge, each one, activate it within you, and move on.
Would you mind just running through those five again?
Intimacy, freedom, trust, mattering, vulnerability. This is now the journey of having done your gathering.
So what's
this
sweep?
Is taking.
Yeah, I don't get the idea of sweeping, so you're...
It's a sweep, because it's a curve. It's like you're here. Done all your gathering, then you follow this little sweep to get to the next stage, which is your rite of passage.
Oh, right. So you'll walk through a pathway.
Yeah. It should be a curve like that.
Yeah.
Might be a little valley you go down, acknowledge this bit there. Here you meet the intimacy, then you freedom, then you trust, then you battery, then you vulnerability. That's where you activate each bit. You can make it through a little journey, but you follow a little curve, that's fine.
Could you like make a small example of how you use that sweep?
We're going to do it in meditation. We're simply going to acknowledge each one, it's going to activate. It's enough to acknowledge it and let it be. It's inside you, you're going to start using it. You're going to let yourself be vulnerable when you do your magic. Let yourself be intimate for your creation. You're going to realise what matters in your life and let things matter. You're going to be free. And you're going to start to trust. Now, how do you trust is a big one, isn't it? In the New Age, everybody tells you to trust, but nobody tells you how. Goes back to the stuff I was saying about expectation and the kind of bullshit we give ourselves saying we expect something and actually it's wishful thinking. In order to know what trust is, I think we first need to get rid of things that pretend to be trust that aren't. Number one, avoidance of responsibility. I'll trust you. One said I'll do the job myself. But if it goes wrong, I can blame you. Good way of passing the buck, isn't it?
Mm.
No, trust is about trusting oneself. If you trust anybody, you first have to trust your ability to assess that person as to their worthiness and their capability and so on. You've got to trust yourself first, otherwise it's not trust. can be a manipulation. Okay, I've asked people to do this before, they let me down. I trust you not like to. I say you better not, otherwise I'm going to add all kinds of guilt to you. That's per manipulation. It's going to be control. Let's say, okay, I've been in meditation, there's lots of contemplation here, and what I've discovered is I am the ruler of the universe. And you look at them and say, what are you talking about? You're not even in the universe. And say, why are you undermining my confidence? What's your agenda? You start getting control and manipulating, instead of saying, I trust that I'm right. That's not trust. So how do you know when it is trust? First of all, let's look at what constitutes a trust issue. Do you know if it's trust or if trust is actually there or not? Three simple rules. There can be a positive or negative outcome. Now here's a big one. The negative is more negative than the positive is positive. Three, you genuinely expect the positive. Let's look what that means. Negative is more negative. Positive is positive. If I was safe, for instance, I'm going to go out and buy a lottery ticket and I trust I'm going to win £1 million. What's a negative? I lose a pound. What's a positive? Gain a million. That is not a trust issue. The risk is nothing. I cannot say I'm trusting I'm going to win. I'm really wasting a pound on a ticket. But it's not a trust issue at all. The other thing I might say, I've got this little secret I want to share with you. It'd be very involved with celebrities, it'll be horrible. But I'm going to trust you. Now the negative is that you'll tell everybody else not be humiliated. Positive, you keep the secret, which it would do it in the first place. That is a trust issue because the negative is more negative than positive and positive. Third component to which you expect the positive. If I realise you're a blabbermouth and you probably will tell everybody, I'm not really trusting. You see the wishful thinking or manipulation or control. What other trend is going on? So first of all, you need to recognise that as to whether it's really a trust issue. So then what do you need to trust? Expectation, as I spoke about, is to actually look beyond. Competence. You don't trust yourself to do a job if you're not competent to do it. Common sense. Intuition, of course. If you actually knew how it's going to turn out, so you wouldn't be a trust issue. But if a certain amount of intuition to say this is likely, the thing about trust is you don't know how it's going to turn out. That's why you have to trust. But you've enough intuition, enough confidence, enough expectation to take a calculated risk and realise this is worth trusting. Doesn't guarantee it's going to work, but that's trust. A lot of responsibility involved in that, isn't it? A lot of thought. Don't just go through life saying trust. That's what people usually do to manipulate you. You need to learn to trust. Yeah. I've heard that before. So, you know, that's the sweep. Let's go on to the rite of passage. It takes a lot of much longer to explain it than it does to do with it, actually. Rite of passage are things you have to show before they let you pass. If somebody comes to a garden and say, what, let's see if you were to come into the space of beauty.
I totally didn't hear that sentence.
It's like you come up to a guardian and say, right, let's see what you've got, see if you're worthy to come to the space of beauty. You write the passage. You write to pass. One, empowerment. What empowerment really means is your authority and permission. If you have the authority and you give yourself permission, that's empowerment. What does authority mean? It's got the word author in it. You're the author of your life. Stop that bossing somebody else around, that's not authority. You're the author of your life. And you're giving us permission to actually do it. Simple, isn't it? That's empowerment. That's where you start from. Second, you must show the light of your passion. Well, you've got some to share it, my then. Yeah, I've got passion, but you can pass now. Third, imagination. You've got imagination? Sure, you all do. Show your imagination, you can pass. Then, home to balance. Now, we did some gathering of that, but let's look at what components of balance actually are, what has to be balanced. Number one. Fantasy must be balanced with wisdom. You can have fantasies, it's all great. If it's wise, that fantasy can become fantasia. Loads of imagination that can create wonderful things. That wisdom, it can just be totally illusion. You get lost. So So it's great to have fantasy, but balance it with wisdom. Two, illumination has to be balanced with shadow. Without that, it blinds and deafens you, leads you astray. A lot of people want to see the light, but with a shadow, they're going to get lost. Three, guidance must be balanced with boundary. I listen to this guidance, great thing. How does it sit with who I am, what I want to do? Don't just listen to any guidance without having your boundaries in place. Freedom must be balanced with responsibility. People often think these two don't go together. But what does responsibility really mean? The ability to respond. A lot of people see it as a burden, rather than a freedom. But it isn't if you look at it that way. Quite often we get a negative attitude towards responsibility, because going back to childhood conditioning, when your mother says, who's responsible for this mess, means who's going to get punished. Say, not me. You don't hear her saying, who's responsible for this tidiness. But the ability to respond is a good thing. It means you want to do something about it, you can get things done. It is a freedom. To be free, you have to be responsible. It means you can change your life, because you're the one who's doing it, not needing somebody else to do it for you. Not saying it's his job to fix it. Just let you know. Look at the people you blame for messing your life up. A parent who disowned you. An ex-spouse who hates you. An ex-boss who won't give you a reference. What's it like going to them to fix your life? I think it's much better to do it yourself, don't you think? So responsibility means you can do it. You can respond. You don't have to go to somebody else to do it for you. It's not somebody else's burden, somebody's job. So the responsibility isn't a burden, it's a freedom. It means you can do it.
I always say, you know, it's exactly what I say to my clients, 100% responsibility, 100% freedom equals 100% responsibility, yeah. Or the other way around. Because if you're, I want to be responsible for everything because it means I can change it. It means I don't have to wait for X, Y, or Z to get it in line. If I'm responsible, it's like I can make it different.
Now, where it gets difficult, though, is when people don't become responsible for impact. Freedom without responsibility is basic tyranny. I'll do what the fuck I like, who cares about you? That's freedom without responsibility. See what I mean? Now, responsible means actually you won't give impact on others as well. That's all part of your plan, how you're going to work your life out. You create your own reality, you have impact on those around you, they'll become part of the picture. To be responsible, you're going to be responsible for all of it. There's freedom within that. But if you have the freedom and that responsibility, you're just going to be like foolhardy and stupid and uncaring and a tyrant. So freedom has to be balanced with responsibility. You want to be free, but with that have responsibility to make it whole. Movement has to be balanced with direction. It's great to move, but know where you're going. Otherwise you're in frenzy and chaos. Madness again. Then love with will, as before. Love has to balance with will has to be balanced with love. Love without will becomes sadomasochistic and leads to apathy. Will without love becomes manipulation and control. Then presence has to be balanced with authority. We all wake up at some point and make a stand for the earth. But then when you wake up and see all these horrible things in life that you don't think you can change, you want to go back to sleep again. Authority means reality, yes, you can change it all. So when you wake up, you've got to say, okay, I can change this. I can make it what I want. Without authority, you go back to sleep. So those are the seven things you balance. Okay, fifth quality.
Can I just ask you, illumination is balanced with shadow?
Yeah.
Thank you.
It's all there.
It's all there. Sorry.
So the fifth stage of the rite of passage is your willingness to access the liminal. So the liminal is in between. Between where you're going, where you are now, where you're going, there's going to be change. You know, change is chaos. Things break apart, you build, don't they? You're going to go through change, but not face what's in between. You're going to go through it. That's the liminal. You want a new relationship, but this one's going to break up first. You go through all that breakup, that's all chaos. That's the liminal. If you don't want to go through that, you won't get to there. You get a better job. We might go through stuff releasing this one and go through this complex and changes, you haven't got money then, so you've got that, and you've got to, you know, various changes you go through, that's the liminal. You go through whatever's in between here and where you're going. You'll be willing to go there. sixth thing, the test you for is your substance. How do you follow through? In other words, if you take this knowledge, you're going to go out and work your magic and change your life. We're going to put it on the shelf and forget about it. You're going to follow through. That substance. Yeah. Good question, that, isn't it? You know this stuff now. Are you going to do it, basically?
I read it differently.
How do you perceive it?
Do you follow through? Just a little chuckle.
Okay. Well, oh,
that's a day.
I won't even go there. Okay.
Good to help
me. No.
Your inner child. Okay, it looks the last step then. Being tethered to the future, not the past. You see, when you're aiming for change, you're in chaos. You seek a tether. When people go wrong, they go back to what's familiar. Remember who you've been, rather than who you're becoming. Simple trick then is to think about who you're becoming. Let that be your tether. You're in chaos. That's going to take you through it. So be aware of that tether when you're in chaos. Tether to the past, to the future, not to the past. Who you're becoming, not what you used to be. You notice that some people go through change. They fall back to the old cops for safety. Well, the trick is to think about who you're becoming. Let that be where you anchor yourself. That'll get you through it. And you actually come out changed rather than going backwards. Simple music in that way, isn't it? Right, those are the steps. Let's do the meditation.